Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
Welcome to the quest for 10,000, your journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, our preview review for Avengers Infinity War, the culmination of Marvel's Phase 3, and really all of the first three phases of their movies to date. We are back after another kind of lengthy hiatus, so we really do appreciate you clicking on this episode, downloading, listening, and hope you will share it with a friend. This being our preview review type of episode, we won't get too much into where Brian is on his quest right at the moment, or what is the latest movie he's watched. We're just going to talk for a little bit about what we're thinking about Avengers Infinity War before we go into the movie. So, Brian, let's start with you. What's your excitement level for this film?
I mean, I've been pretty excited for the better part of a month, especially. The previews and commercials have made me just so super excited. When you have Star-Lord and Iron Man and their banter kind of going back and forth, and just seeing some of that is just so, you know, it's just so cool to see these characters that we don't particularly care for, we don't care for as much, but the ones we love sort of just interacting, and it's just a great feeling.
We talked about in our preview review of Black Panther how this really whet our appetites again for the next thing that Marvel would do after that film. So I agree, and to see now, especially, I think people want to see Black Panther and how Black Panther interacts with a lot of these characters. And then also the success of Thor Ragnarok. I think the build to this has been really good. I'm a little bit nervous. It might not live up quite to the full expectations. I'm not sure that this movie will be as solid of a film as, say, Avengers was, as Black Panther was, as some of the others.
Well, my fear is that this movie is going to be a giant tease for the next Avengers movie. You know, I mean, I feel like they have been promoting this, and it says on all of their stuff, it's like the end of the beginning or the, you know, 10 years in the making. And because of that, I think audiences, and maybe partially myself, will expect some sort of like resolution to a lot of stories in this movie. And I'm afraid that we're not going to feel like that was done.
You're referring to originally that they were calling this Avengers Infinity War Part 1, Part 2. They're going to film it back to back. Then they kind of changed that, and there has been, I feel like, some speculation in the month leading up that Avengers 4 is going to be much more of a direct sequel than it seemed like it was when they first sort of announced, oh, no, it's not going to be called Avengers Infinity War 2.
Yeah, it feels like all the hype that we're experiencing right now and the way that the marketing for Infinity War has been, it feels like that this hype and this marketing would probably be more appropriate for next year's movie.
And it feels a little bit, what I'll say going in, is it feels a little bit like J.J. Abrams' Benedict Cumberbatch is not Khan. That there may be a way that this movie kind of stands on its own, but that we've been told a little bit, like you're saying, a little bit too much, that it's going to end a lot of things in a narrative arc sort of way.
Yeah, and instead I think it's going to build and point to an end, but not quite get there. And they're going to save all of that for the movie in a year. Which, granted, you know, it's just a year. And one thing that I am really curious about is, from what I understand, you know, this movie is going to lead pretty much directly into the need for a Captain Marvel film, and it's going to be, you know, one of the main things. But we got another movie in July, Ant-Man and the Wasp, which it feels like is going to feel superfluous at this point. Like, it's going to feel like, why do we care about this right now? Give us more Infinity War.
But I'm also really excited to see Josh Brolin as Thanos. I think that we've talked about before, too, a lot of folks have talked about the lack of really compelling villains By my count, we really have had two in Killmonger, Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger, Black Panther, and Tom Hiddleston as Loki. So I'm really interested to see Brolin and to see how much of a compelling character he can cut, as he's really a CGI character, and Brolin's offering a voiceover to you. So it would be interesting to me to see that performance.
CGI character, and everybody loves Groot as a compelling, and Rocket is a CGI character. So they've proven they can put characters that don't physically exist and make us care about them.
Sure, but to me, the degree of difficulty of that with a villain is probably a little bit more.
And I agree with you, because I think one thing that there aren't many major quibbles with the way Marvel has set up their universe. But one thing, if you wanted to, was that the villains have all, with the exception of Loki, been one-offs. Like, it's been the rise and quick fall, and we're done with that villain. And we don't revisit. They don't, like, you know, because typically in a comic book, a villain is going to come back again and again and again and again. And we haven't had that, with the exception of Loki. You could argue that Loki is not truly a villain in a way, especially in the way they characterized him. He's sort of a tweener, or he's like a back-and-forth kind of character who doesn't really exist in either space, because they don't always treat him like a villain.
We're going to get into our predictions now. Instead of doing this where we do kind of general predictions, I wanted to pick maybe a few categories. So the first two are kind of with characters. I'm wondering who you think is going to be kind of the main focal point from the hero's perspective. And then who might also be kind of a breakout character? You know, maybe someone like how Rocket Raccoon, in some ways, in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies has been, where Star-Lord is the focus, but Rocket or Groot have sort of been the other ones that are kind of fan favorites. So who do you think in this movie, who's going to be the focal point, and who's going to be kind of the breakout kind of character?
One thing I think this movie's going to do, and I don't know that calling them breakout is fair, but I think it's going to elevate. I think Thor is a character on the rise, and I think this movie will continue with his kind of rise into up there. Because right now, when you say the Avengers, you know, you can say what you want, but you mean Iron Man and Captain America. Okay, after that, you can argue, but those are your two. I think Thor makes a genuine leap into that discussion, and I think the other character that leaps into that level of, like, pantheon-level character is Doctor Strange. I think Doctor Strange and Thor will, and part of that, I think, is smart, because I think the next phase of Marvel will be more space-oriented. I mean, they're going to expand the universe. And those are two characters that can go, and like Thor just did in Ragnarok, and Doctor Strange can go into these other realms, and so that makes sense.
So who would you pick then, if those are sort of your elevated characters, who do you think, though, is kind of the most face time of all the heroes?
The most face time?
Or who's the focal point of the heroes?
I would be surprised if it wasn't Iron Man. I'd be surprised if Iron Man were not the focal point of, the emotional, heft of the story is going to be Iron Man, and with a close second, Captain America. But I think it's Iron, in part because I think you kind of want to end where you start.
Right. Yeah. The narrative arc, I agree totally on that, leads to Tony kind of being the main protagonist, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I really think, obviously, I mean, this maybe is cliche. I mean, I think Thanos is going to be your breakout character.
Sure.
That one might be too easy. Of the heroes, though, I'm kind of keeping a little bit of an eye again, I think, on Black Panther. And if there's any way to kind of, again, put him even on that elevated
status. I'll say this too.
I'll say that
if there had been more time in between Black Panther, like if this movie came out a year after Black Panther, as opposed to it was mostly filmed and already done before Black Panther premiered even, I think his role in this movie would have been vastly different.
And that's kind of my point. I'm wondering if maybe there's maybe been some kind of thing that already will elevate that. Who do you think is going to be the first character who might die?
Well, I mean, I've speculated, and I think we've talked about it in the past, that Tony or Captain would leave, because both of them, both Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans more vocally than Robert Downey Jr., have hinted that their time with the MCU is coming to a close. But I think the most obvious character, though, because he has a freaking Infinity Stone in his forehead, Vision seems like the story doesn't really leave you much of an out for where Vision can go post-Infinity War. Because, I mean, we have to believe that if Thanos doesn't come awfully close, you have to believe, even if he doesn't get them all in the gauntlet, doesn't put the gauntlet on, you have to think he gets all of the stones. Because, I mean, otherwise, where's your dramatic tension? You know, he's got to, you can't stop him, like, after two. He's got to get from right up there and at that cusp. So, right. I think Vision has to, you have to address that.
I think with Thor encountering Thanos' ship at the end of Thor Ragnarok, I kind of wonder if maybe it's a character from Thor Ragnarok that we see die on screen first.
It could be.
It's some sort of establishing shot of how really badass Thanos is.
Which character is going to get lost in the shuffle?
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, because you got 40 characters, and which character is just going to be kind of like, yeah, they're in the movie, but eh.
I'm kind of wondering if Spider-Man in some way is going to get a little lost in everything.
The only reason I say Spider-Man really probably isn't a prime candidate is because of his proximity and his relationship to Tony.
Okay, well then who would you choose?
If you believe this movie is about Tony, then everybody in his orbit gets kind of elevated because they're close to Tony. The character that I'm afraid, my fear is that they have built it up in every movie, the character's sort of presence, and seems to be riding some momentum, but I think this is the first movie that she's in where she takes a step back, and that's Black Widow.
Yeah, the blonde-haired Black Widow.
Yeah, I just think that they, I don't know if they know what to do with her now. Like, they've slowly built her. You know, in every movie that Black Widow's been in, from Avengers to Captain America Civil War and so on and so forth, and Winter Soldier specifically, her character has gotten more and more kind of like one of the focal points. Part of that's by design. Part of that's because of just the moment we live in, and people are so invested in a female superhero, and she, you know, she's kind of riding that crest. So many things going together, but I just don't feel like they know where to put her in a movie this big and this cosmic.
That's a good thing. Well, let's end there and go see this big, epic, cosmic movie. Now, listeners, before we do take a break, we'll say this. We are not going to be recording the review part right after the movie as we have with some others. Brian and I agreed we kind of maybe need to take a breath after this movie because of the high potential for it to end in dramatic fashion. And so we want to take a little bit more time to think about it rather than maybe potentially just say, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, after we watch it and come back. We're going to have maybe a little bit more nuanced discussion than that. So we'll record about a day after we've seen that. So the next time you hear our voices, we'll have had time to watch Infinity War and process it a bit. So we will talk to you then.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And we're back. And holy shit.
It was a pleasant way to spend an afternoon.
Oh my goodness. Spoiler alerts for Avengers Infinity War. 3, 2, 1, go. Everybody dies. Or not everybody, but
well,
half of everybody, you know, dies.
The one thing about the deaths I thought was interesting is the majority of the original Avengers survived. Like, I think all of them did.
Yeah, all the original Avengers did survive. We assume Hawkeye survived, although we don't see Hawkeye in the movie at all.
Which cannot be a coincidence, right? Cannot be a coincidence.
It'll be really interesting to see the director's cut to see what scene.
I have not seen.
Got cut.
I don't know if this is true or not. It may be a Photoshop gimmick that somebody did. But I saw something where somebody said if you zoom in on one of the Avengers posters, that Ant-Man is hanging on to the Infinity Gauntlet. That he is in the poster, hanging on to the gauntlet.
Interesting. Well, you know, only two Marvel characters who really didn't appear at all were Scott Lang, Ant-Man, and Clint Barton, Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner, Paul Rudd. They were mentioned briefly, but everybody else was in this movie. And I got to say, one of the things we talked about before, you know, how are they going to balance everything? Is everybody going to get a moment to shine? Is anybody going to get lost in the wash? I really think everybody got at least one moment, or at least each distinct property got some kind of moment in this film.
I would say every character got a moment that was for them. Yeah, I would say that's fair.
I thought that was a real strength of the movie and what the Russos did. I would say, though, that may also be, like a lot of things in this movie, now that we've had a little over 24 hours to think about it, it may also be, if I have weaknesses to point out, some of the strengths, the other side of them, or some of the maybe weaknesses of the movie. So, everybody had a moment to shine, but it really, as I thought about it more, this movie was more a series of really tightly interconnected vignettes that formed a relatively cohesive, full narrative, I thought. But you know, some folks might see that and feel a little like the story may be weaker approach.
But I think they intentionally, not intentionally, they knew they could get away with that because in each one of those vignettes, you had superheroes meeting for the first time. So, you know, it was and doing it that way, as opposed to all the superheroes meet together, let you really focus on some interaction between Strange and Stark, between Strange and Spider-Man, you know, in a way that if they'd all been there together, that definitely wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Breakout star, definitely, to me, Doctor Strange. He got more mega screen time
than any other character,
I thought. He got elevated more than any other character.
I think what we're seeing between last fall, Ragnarok, and this movie, what we're seeing is Thor has burst into the top tier.
That's true, and you mentioned that in our preview section. I do think you're right about that, but it really, you know, the movie was Thanos' movie. That's what some of the advanced reviews
said. And I'll say this about Thor, though. Before Ragnarok, really, in the first two movies, Branagh's version, and then whoever did the other one, I'm forgetting, and I know I shouldn't, but they never really found the right tone for Thor. Like, in some ways, he was a little too brooding and a little too super serious. But with Ragnarok, they've hit on a tone, I think, that they can run with. And he was razor sharp wit, and just his and Chris Hemsworth is really elevating himself with his work in these two movies, because Thor has suddenly like become, you know, he's going to be reliably funny. And he had some of the best lines of the movie.
Yeah, the interactions between characters were really, really fresh. I loved the dialogue and that, and even the pacing of the movie I thought was really great.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'll go back just to me. Benedict Cumberbatch was a real revelation. Also, that Doctor Strange, again, kind of a C-list character in the Marvel canon in some ways. Really, I mean, he was there with Iron Man and Spider-Man throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Four
or five years ago, you could have reasonably said that Doctor Strange would be a Netflix property alongside Daredevil, and because that was the level he was at, right?
Sure.
Wouldn't that be fair to think that he was at that kind of a... That's where he belonged. And instead, he is now, you know, co-headlining in a way, or at least he's responsible for the big, you know, kind of climax of the film. He's there.
And
that would have been hard to say 5 years ago.
He's also...
The same is true for Guardians.
To me, he's the linchpin of the story.
The assumption that he is the Deus Ex Machina in a way that sort of unwinds Thanos' plot. I mean, I think that's a good assumption, but it's still an assumption that he's the mechanism by which we
In the theater, I turned and looked at both my wife and then at you. At that point where he goes, "There's only one way we win," and then it fades. You know, then it cuts real quick. And I said to both of you, And everything we see from now on is that one plan. Like, no matter what happens, that one plan. And there's, well, and you know, the way he looked at Tony when he gave Thanos both the stone and then he said this was the only way, very reminiscent of how Alan Rickman looked at Dumbledore when he killed him in the Half-Blood Prince. So I'm just saying, I think it's all part of the plan.
And they reiterated that at the end of the movie when he said, sorry, Tony, it was the only way, or it was the only, you know, he said something right to that effect again. So
here's another strength of that movie. Here's another strength of that movie. The fact that it could hit you so emotionally.
Oh my gosh.
With those deaths and with the Avengers losing, but at the same time, for folks who know the source material, that this happens in the comics and everybody comes back and realizes, hey, we've got sequels to all these movies. They're all coming back. You know, it's sort of this interesting way they set up really well, and it's really emotional and impacted. But it's also, in some ways, if you're really looking for it, that moment's a little lampshaded in some ways, too.
Well, I'll tell you this, too. The one death, the one sacrificial death that the one I just did not see coming, like, it was not on my radar, was Gamora. Did not see it coming. Especially the way they did it. But having said that, the one moment of the movie that really, in some ways, even though it was set up so well, the one moment that really sort of got me, that more I was like caught myself going, oh, was Groot cutting off his arm to be in this. That was so cool.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was really,
that to me was like, because they played it up and they pretty well established that Groot's just like keen or whatever. For him to come to that sort of like growth moment of it's bigger than me, and it was just really, really cool.
Yeah, so. I love that. I loved also everything with Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
And the Hulk.
Although, I will say this, I would have liked a little bit more explanation in some way as to what was going on with him and the Hulk. Like, why is the Hulk scared or won't come out, or why is that happening now? I felt like, I mean, it was a cool idea, and it's cool that, you know, at the time he wants the Hulk, he can't get the Hulk, when most of the time it's been the other way around. But it seemed, you know, I just would like to know what triggered it.
And for that maybe it'd have been a little bit more articulated. I like that they didn't go overboard on the Nat Bruce kind of dynamic. They just kind of greeted each other. I thought that was well handled. I think again the other thing that I really liked was that they really revealed, even for Thanos, the whole theme of all these Marvel movies. And really, of Marvel Comics in general, if you think about it, starting with the Fantastic Four, even though the Fantastic Four is not a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
But you're right.
It's about family. And that was really great. But there again, maybe one of the weaknesses of, you know, you're going to the well a lot with everybody has to lose their brother or kill their father or kill their brother or have everything.
I think part
lost.
Of that, though, is, and this is for superheroes in general, because you go back to Batman, Superman, obviously, too. But I think part of what it's saying is that who we are is such largely defined by our family, by, you know, the relationships we form with our parents, with our siblings, and how that propels us into becoming the man or woman or whatever it is that we're going to become, is those dynamics that inform us. And I think that's why it's such a right thing. I mean, you know, it is a little over the top and a little bit like hitting the hammer on the head over and over and over again, because I get it. Every single one of these guys has some sort of daddy issue, or they've had some sort of major sacrifice in their thing. But still, I think that the reason it resonates is because it rings true. It is true.
Right. I think, something worth mentioning. We talked about this in our preview of you know, how would Black Panther affect this movie. I think Black Panther stands as the prime example of this. This movie, its most emotional moments also, to me, were built not necessarily on the narrative that was told within this movie, but on everything that came before. And for that, Black Panther, because Black Panther, if you hadn't seen that movie ahead of time, he comes off as really a side character. Like the Russos showed remarkable trust and boldness in the audience that everybody's come and seen this. We don't need to do other exposition on this. People are going to see, just seeing Black Panther and Wakanda again, people are going to be like, that's still cool. And it kind of worked for me, but again, your mileage may vary. That could also be seen as a weakness by some for this film, but it worked. I think where that will be interesting to see how that plays out is I'm not sure how much this film is going to get repeat viewings, like Avengers, like Black Panther, in part because of the way it ends in such a bleak note. Although yeah. It's cool at the very end of the credits, Thanos will return. I thought that was kind of cool.
Unless you're super excited to see Thanos, you know, sitting there watching the sunset.
Well, we know that's not what's going to happen, but
you could argue that's a happy ending for him,
right?
I mean, you know, he gets exactly what. But one thing I thought, and I read an article today talked about how that in the past they haven't been that this is the first iteration of Spider-Man the big screen, and I don't get on a personal level I don't get the hatred for either Maguire. Retroactive hatred for Maguire, because the same people that say they hate him loved him 5 years ago. But the retroactive hatred for him and the hatred for Garfield's version, they were fine movies. But having said that, this version of Spider-Man, Tom Holland's version, is the first version that really, really focuses on how young he is. That really sort of like nails that and drives that down over your head over and over and over again that this is a kid. And the other version may have played lip service to it, but it never really felt like he was. You know, it felt like maybe, but it's not believably that way. I mean, the little references to old movies and all that, maybe it's a little on the nose, but it works. And I like that version of it. And I also saw an interview today where there was a theory, and Tom Holland confirmed it. In Iron Man 2, there's a little boy that is facing a drone or something, and Iron Man saves him, Tony Stark saves him. That is Peter Parker.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, because Tom Holland pretty much confirmed and said, yeah, that's Peter Parker. And that, so that it adds some even more depth to the relationship that he has with Mr. Stark. And you know, look, they set it up nicely where he could have a similar relationship with Doctor Strange, because clearly they have that same sort of banter going on.
Right.
But, yeah, it was a great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. You said right before we started recording that's right behind Avengers for you. I don't know where it is in the pantheon for me, but I agree, it's great. I think it'll have to be for me fully judged when we get Avengers 4 Part
sure.
2.
But on its own, I think we can both agree that Ultron looks worse and worse.
Yeah, Ultron was just a bridge to get here, and it had its own moments. But yeah, this is much better. Than that. Ultron looks like it was treading water more than anything else. You know, we're about to run out of time with this, but go see this movie. It's great. I do hope I'm going to be able to go see it again and see some stuff I missed again, kind of pick up on some other nuances.
And
Bring on Captain Marvel. That's right. Well, listeners, thank you so much for joining us again for this conversation about Avengers Affinity War. And we hope that your week will be a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline. Thanks, everybody.